Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, not too long back, we were going down the road in the automobile. Not surprisingly, in the automobile. And that song came on the radio, some 80s, oldies station, whatever. In a big country, by big country. I love that song. It's part of why it's the intro music. And honest to God, without even thinking, I yelled, well, howdy, right at that spot. It was funny. And it happened while we were on the way to D.C. Agnes looked at me and said, Bob, you think it might be time for a vacation? I looked at her and went, mm-hmm, yes. Right. I just thought you'd like that. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home for yea, verily, lo, these last 10 years. And it remains our home, thanks entirely to you who keep all of this going. I invite you to go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, check out a selection of news stories, which I didn't get to posting today, mainly because I got all wrapped up in the Lynchburg bomb train explosion. Jesus God. Tweeted and Facebook pretty prolifically about that while it was going on. It didn't mercifully transform into a Lockmagantic situation. But, you know, some train cars tumbled into the James River. Some oil caught fire on the James River. And, you know, it's okay. Just like every now and then, we have a butcher's bill to pay for the Second Amendment. Every now and then, we get a little bill handed to us by the extreme energy extraction industry, and they say, hey, listen, we're going to need to poison your water for a while. We're going to need to pump some ungodly amounts of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons into your air. We're going to need to infest your lungs with some ultrafine particulate matter. Don't worry about it. You probably won't get cancer for 10 or 15 or 20 years, and by then we'll be long gone. Trust us. It's the one thing you can trust us about. Yeah, it's just it's the price we pay for civilization. No. We've had non-hydrocarbon based civilizations that were pretty damn brilliant over the last few tens of thousands of years. No, it's not the price we pay for civilization. It's the price we pay for freedom. Just like with guns? No, there have been free people who didn't have to burn hydrocarbons, so that's not going to work. Liberty? No. The concepts of liberty we presently understand were actually put down on paper before hydrocarbon burning was even a thing. So, let's see, it's not civilization, it's not freedom, it's liberty. Because money? There we are. You betcha, because money. Every now and then, a bomb train's going to blow up in a place like Lynchburg or Lockmagantic or somewhere in North Dakota or maybe down in Pickens County, Alabama or somewhere in Mississippi Stan, and it's going to burn and burn and burn, put all kinds of toxins into the air and all over creation. It's going to screw up. It costs tons and tons of money, and we're going to continue to trundle this toxic filth across the country in rail cars that were not meant to carry it, ought not carry it, and shouldn't be legal to carry it. Probably ain't legal, but when has legal ever slowed down the hydrocarbon industry? When has legal laws? We don't need no stinking laws. We're the oil industry. We'll blow up a platform in the Gulf of Mexico and kill the entire Gulf. Why not? Because money. We're the oil industry. We'll run a tanker aground in Valdez, Alaska. And, well, why not? Because we're the oil industry. And, hey, we done bought us a Congress, and we got us some judges on the Supreme Court. And, oh, it's all just, that's, everything's okay. What? You don't like it? No, tough shit. You're a piss ant. We're ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, what have you. We're TransCanada. Yeah, TransCanada has a charm campaign, a charm offensive going on in Texas right now, where they're giving away money hand over foot down in East Texas to make folks think better of that gang of hydrocarbon Borgias. Yeesh. It is about 6 minutes past the hour, and we will be talking with our good buddy Steve Horn, no relation to the radio network, except for the fact that he's a good friend of the Horn. We'll be talking to Steve Horn here in a very few short minutes about the Lynchburg bomb train that went off today. Lots of great journalism going on there, too. Oh, my God. Steve, of course, we are buffered up right past our neck bones. Yeah. Damn it. Looks like we're going to have another one of those nights. Sorry. Can't get the stream going. All right, we're going again for a little bit. Who knows how long. Wish we could resolve this. Ben and I are continuing to talk about this. He continues to work on it, and I do what he tells me to do. So, anyway, we'll be talking to Steve Horn here in a few minutes. And a little reminder as we begin the program, thanks going out, lots of thanks, big thanks, for the folks who helped us out last night and continued to help after the program. Because we were in rather of a significant hole. Let's see here. We'll get there in a minute. Yeah, I wanted to extend thanks to For the Earthy, who helped out after program time closed last night. Also to Anthony, as well as to the computer's being a little less than cooperative. Also to Matthew, and all of that help wound up. We ended the program last night with the hole $320 deep, and the hole then thanks to the aforementioned, the hole went down to 240. So that makes tonight's fundraising goal 390. Just as we come to the end of April, April being the cruelest month, according to T.S. Eliot. But as daunting as that may sound, I'm happy to say that there is a challenge on the table from Jay Cruzen. Jay Cruzen has offered to double the first $100 that come in, So if you reach out and help us keep this on the air, your 5 will become 10, 10 will get you 20, 20 will get you 40, et cetera, up to the first $100 that roll in the door. And that'll go a long way toward eliminating, filling in this little hole we're standing in. Maybe we can get to the point where we can see over the top of it. So just remember, there is a challenge on the table. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where the PayPal button is. That's also where you'll find the traditional mail address, which, incidentally, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, Personal Mailbox, 318. Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Okay? And that's how we keep this all going. So let us go forthwith to the phones, where I expect that we probably have on the line intrepid journalist and D-Smog blog reporter Steve Horn joining us at this point in time. Is that you, Steve?
That's me. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. Thanks for popping in at such short notice. I saw you responding to my line of semi-panicked tweets out there. I'm sorry, Steve. I start flipping out when I see this stuff.
Yeah, we should.
Like these bomb trains. And let's you handed me some data that sort of made my eyes roll back in my head. So this thing blows up in Lynchburg today. It could have been anywhere on that route, that CSX route. It happened to be Lynchburg. It happened to be downtown. It happened to be near a crowded area. I guess if one was a religious or faithful type, one would say that it was a miracle that a whole bunch of little children in that area down there who were there weren't blown into little tiny hydrocarbon bits. But because it was Lynchburg, it could be anywhere else along that route. Please explain, if you would, because I'm prone to screaming. I mean, this stuff's coming from the Bakken crude zone of North Dakota, and it's coming east. At what rate, at what volume, over what period of time?
Well, yeah, so the Bakken Shale Basin is in North Dakota. The main way, the majority of the oil gets to market, various markets, as I'll explain, from pipelines, actually, from that particular shale basin, which the oil is obtained from hydraulic fracturing or fracking. It actually goes to market predominantly by rail, trains like CSX or Burlington Northern, Santa Fe, and others bring it south, west, and east, as this one got to market from. So that's the main way. East Coast formerly was a huge importer of oil. Now, because of fracking in North Dakota in particular, it may become an export zone. We talked about this a little bit on Twitter. We had it back and forth. I figured out that this oil was headed to a facility owned by Plains All American, which is also a pipeline company. And their terminal in particular, which is located in Yorktown, Virginia, has been kind of pointed out by the industry as one of the possible places where exports could happen from, because they have an ocean offloading zone. So it's not yet an export facility yet, but this is a big push right now by the American Petroleum Institute and by lots of oil companies, ExxonMobil, and especially the oil majors, to turn the United States basically into an export colony. So this is one of the places where it could happen in the future. And there's a February article in Reuters that covers this that I just tracked down right before the call.
Yeah, I think that because I made a mistake, and I freely admit my mistakes when I make them. I was afraid that afraid the right word. I figured this stuff was headed for the export market because that's what we expect to happen with the Keystone XL tar sands crude, right? It's going to go down to Houston. It's going to get on a boat and go to China. But apparently there's a ban in place, so we're using this to promote freedom. Am I understanding that correctly?
If the oil is produced in the United States, it can't be exported. I mean, some oil products, byproducts can be exported, but crude oil, and especially in 2004, could export U.S. crude oil if ban lifted, and that was February 2014 in Reuters. So business press is covering this. Environmentalists are a little bit behind, although we tend to learn about things after disaster, and especially in the past year or so with several oil trains exploding. So this is not the only one. I covered another one actually earlier this year in Castleton, North Dakota.
Right, and then there was Pickens County, Alabama, Loch Megantic. I mean, this stuff. And why? I guess that's one of the essential questions, Steve. Why are these trains exploding? What is it about crude oil? Because I mean, for instance, it's illegal, or so I've been told by folks who are intimately familiar with the railroad industry. It's illegal, say, to send tank cars full of gasoline down rail lines. And yet, we've had one individual on this program who explained that this stuff is more volatile than gasoline. Is this just an overall transport snare?
It's a multi-pronged issue. Number one, Bakken shale oil has been by the federal government has been basically said to be more volatile than most oils. It's lighter, so it's almost more like a gasoline in its consistency and its chemical composition. So because of that, it has a sort of a lower temperature flash point, and so a lot of, you know, that's why a lot of scientists say this has been happening. And number two is this other battle that's going on that's completely related over the type of cars that it's transported in, and that's something called a DOT 111, and these are really outdated cars, decades old, probably not meant to be holding this type of stuff. The walls of it are thinner than they should be. And so, you know, the material is volatile, but also what's holding it, you know, gets more combustible or easier to explode the way they do. So that's another thing that's been happening since Loch Megantic, since Castleton, is this battle over whether these rail companies and whether the oil industry will have to, you know, pony up and pay more for updated cars. And so far they've been basically battling not to have to do anything about it, both at the state level and state houses around the country, but also at the federal level. So that's another thing to look out for in the days and weeks ahead, to see if there's increased urgency by the federal government and at the state level to make the rail and oil industry do something about this. As of yet, they haven't had to, and they've been fighting hard not to.
Well, you know, these industries very seldom admit that they've even got a problem. And so it came as a bit of a shock to me when our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky sent me a story from NBC News not that long back. And it references specifically, Steve, those very rail cars that you're talking about, those, what was it, the 111s?
DOT 111.
Yeah, and it says that there's been an upgrade to the cars, but now the rail industry itself is saying that it thinks that thousands of new tank cars that were designed to prevent these explosions may not work.
Well, one of the things that I'll say, that's a good point. The industry has been on the record admitting it. There's an article that I wrote after the Castleton disaster that happened at the end of 2013. I looked at the permit because I looked at, you can learn things just by looking up where these trains are going. So I looked up where it was headed to, and it was headed to the Mississippi River to be barged down to the Gulf. And you know, in Missouri, where it was going to be put on the Mississippi River, their Department of Natural Resources, the company that was looking to do get the barging down the Mississippi River, admitted that this stuff is more volatile. So that's the industry admitting it on a governmental record that most people just don't look at. So there's probably all kinds of examples of it if you really just started pulling permits and looked closely. But in their public relations, in terms of how they explain it to what most of the public will see, there's no problem. It's A-okay. But the scary thing is that, as you pointed out, these things are traveling across the country, west, south, and east. And these are disasters waiting to happen everywhere across America and North America, because the Lake Mégantic one was in Quebec, and these aren't just limited to the United States. The Bakken crude can cross that border. We talked about the international crude export ban. That's not in terms of North America, that's not included. So it can go from the United States to Canada. And so this is also a threat to Canadians. So it's not, you know, it's both countries, and it's affected both countries.
And the scope of this, though, I read one report out of the Syracuse. Let me find it here. The Syracuse New Times that says that every 2 hours, one of these trains leaves the Bakken crude zone, you know, headed either southeast or southeast. Every 2.5 hours, a train of 100 cars leaves North Dakota laden with crude oil, the report says. And that adds up in a hurry. So, I mean, there's the overarching problem of how do you inform the public? How do you make people aware? Because if as CSX says, this particular train left Chicago bound, and I love this part, Steve, they said it left Chicago. Well, that's fairly specific. And then it just said bound for Virginia. As if they, I don't know, they were just going to pull off to a siding as soon as they crossed the state line and wait for somebody to come get it. But it was bound for Virginia. And if I understand CSX correctly, that's probably the same rail line that I've ridden between, say, Thurmond, West Virginia, and Chicago. It's the same rail line that the Amtrak Cardinal runs on. It goes through Chicago, it goes through Illinois, it goes through Indiana, Kentucky, it crosses the Ohio River back into West Virginia. It goes, that very train probably traveled through the incredibly beautiful national park region of the scenic New River Gorge of West Virginia.
Well, you know, I mentioned those two things that have been the main battles, the DOT 111, and the other thing I mentioned. But the third thing that I haven't mentioned is that these bomb trains, as activists have called them, essentially have been clogging up the rail lines. So the commuter rail, for example, has been delayed, you know, lots of lines have been delayed. So we're talking about, oil on the rail, it's kind of this contradiction that you see, basically. Oil on the rail is stopping something that would actually be environmentally friendly, which is people taking trains. So people wanting to take trains when there's these huge delays because of the bomb trains. So, I mean, that's a really good point.
But Steve, these trains never, you seldom see these trains running behind, say, the Greenbrier Resort, or the McMansions of the 1%, wherever they are, but they darn sure run through little former coal company shanty towns. The trains always run along near the least economic. It's usually
Lynchburg happens close to Washington D.C., so especially policymakers. So I think that this could serve potentially as a wake-up call, based on the fact that so many of these trains are headed towards the East Coast. And one other really important thing is that a CSX rail proposal is actually happening right now in D.C. Actually, one of them, one of these trains with oil may go through D.C. That's been debated at the D.C. City Council level. So this is definitely, I think this will definitely serve as a wake-up call.
And the Congress has sat around and done a little bit of congressional hand-wringing, I think in the Senate in particular, if I'm not mistaken. But nothing has come of that yet, has it?
No, not yet. But at the bureaucratic level, the agencies that oversee the rail, there is movement, there is talk about what to do about it, and there's obviously a lot of counter-pressure by the industry to do nothing about it. But, I mean, it's been because of these disasters, there's been a lot of discussion at the bureaucratic level about how to handle this and what to do next. And we'll see what happens after Lynchburg. But, I mean, I think that it will be a big wake-up call based on the fact that it was so close to Washington, D.C., and the fact that this same company is proposing sending its oil through Washington, D.C.
Is this also being used, Steve, as an argument to say, well, that's why we need to build more pipelines?
Certainly. Yeah, it sure is. Definitely. I mean, that's what, talk about the Senate level. John Hoeven, GOP senator in North Dakota, for example, has gone on the record, in hearings talking about how this is why we need Keystone XL, and other pipelines like it so that these disasters can't happen. So they just use it, that people like him and, the people who fund him, which is the oil and gas industry, they use it as an opportunity to promote pipelines. Which they have their own problems. That's a discussion for a different day. But
yeah, Mayflower, Arkansas comes to mind.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to point out to you, and this is just by way of connection making, Steve. You might want to talk to or contact on Facebook an old friend of the program by the name of John Wathen, W-A-T-H-E-N. He went up to Castleton, North Dakota, and he doesn't live far from Pickens County, Alabama. And this guy is an intrepid investigator of this kind of stuff. I imagine you two could probably become fast friends on this issue, because you mentioned that Lynchburg was about the biggest town that one of these things had happened in yet. When I talked to John Wathen some months back about the Castleton disaster, I mean, these things are disasters when they happen. One of the things that he pointed out was there are Bakken crude trains that cross a truly rickety old trestle over the Black Warrior River into Tuscaloosa, Alabama, every day. And so, I mean, that's one of those things, I guess, just from a, I don't know, from a poet's sensibility or whatever it is that I have, that I think about. It's little towns, or towns we're going to learn about only because we never thought about them until something blew up there. And
precisely, yeah.
And I wonder what recourse do they have? And I started thinking, and I put it out on the Twitter feed earlier today, as you probably saw, a bunch of this stuff poured into the James River and caught fire. So now Lynchburg can add its name to that of Cleveland, of cities in America whose river has caught fire. And at one point, the local station that was covering this stuff said, yes, there are cars, plural, and one person said several rail cars in the river.
In the river, yep. Iconic picture now up on Twitter, probably has gone viral at this point, of that happening. And should add that the city, right now the city can't drink its own water, so that's another crisis.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going. How about the people downstream of this stuff? Have they?
Right.
I'm sensitive to this now because of the Freedom Industries disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Did they shut off their intakes?
They did in Lynchburg. And one thing worth mentioning is that this James River connects to the Chesapeake Bay tributary. So, we are only beginning to learn about what impacts this has.
So this stuff has the potential to go all the way to the Chesapeake Bay.
It has. I can't say for certain because no one's calculated how much oil, and at this point they're still trying to put out the fire they've contained, but they haven't yet fully put out the fire that's on the train right now. So unfortunately, because of how bad that is, the water damage is playing second fiddle right now. But now that oil that was in the train that's now, these cars that are in the river, oil is spilling into the river. So it's still super early, and I don't want to say that it's Freedom Industries take two, but I do want to say that it's definitely alarming.
Well, in terms of pure numbers, how many gallons of this stuff does one rail car hold?
There's two key statistics. Where it was headed, the Yorktown facility intakes, it has a capacity to intake roughly 160,000 barrels of oil per day. I think these trains generally usually carry about 100,000 barrels of oil between the cars, and the cars are usually sometimes up to, or the trains are usually sometimes up to 100 cars long, depending on the car. And I think that this York Tunnel is probably about average, so about 100. I don't know if this one in particular that exploded was that long, but the news reports were saying that it was a really long, train. So I'm guessing that it may be around that long. So, I mean, that's a long way of saying that there's quite a bit of oil that are on these trains.
And does the aging and poorly maintained railroad infrastructure in this country play into this problem as well, Steve?
Yeah, so that goes back to the DOT 111 issue. And the Sightline Institute in Washington has done a lot of watchdogging of this. And Eric DePlace, who's their policy director, basically has said that the industry, even if they do add new infrastructure, updated infrastructure to the DOT 111, which is decades old, they have never said that they're going to take those ones off the rail. So it would just be in addition to what's already on the rail, which is, again, frightening because these are the things that are exploding. We don't know, and one thing I do want to add, we don't know for sure if this was a DOT 111, but the Huffington Post did report that they said it was maybe one, and it's almost, I would say, 99% likely that it was, because those are the main things that carry these at this point, and the industry hasn't moved to update the infrastructure.
Well, for a progressive audience like the Horn Family Commune congregation here, are there any progressive or even remotely progressive
states that were impacted, like North Dakota, people like, interestingly, John Hoeven, who I just mentioned, even though he's saying on one hand we need to do more pipelines because of these rail cars, people like the state of North Dakota are also coming in support of Democrats to have to talk about it, or maybe he will talk about it. So it'll be interesting to see what unfolds after this, given how close it was to D.C.
Well, it will be interesting, and I really appreciate Steve
on this debate over the DOT 111, because that's kind of the future of this issue. And I guess from here, just be interesting and kind of hopeful that not too much damage to the water in the area, because it's drinking water for a lot of people. So
and maybe for just people to be alert to these things. I mean, just
That's another thing. Yeah, listeners, I would say, I mean, if this doesn't serve, this should serve as a wake-up call to, at the local level, look at what rail cars are traveling through.
Yeah, and if you're east of North Dakota in particular, do you happen to know the hazmat classification or the placard number that goes with this stuff? Because that has to be displayed on the cars, right?
It does have to be displayed in the cars. I don't know it off the top of my head. Although, yeah, it is a common, on each one it would be the same, classified by the Department of Transportation. So I guess I would just say, that's something everyone can do at the local level if they want to be active in their communities, is, and their interest in this issue is, which I think we all should be, given what the reverberations of not caring about it could be. We should be looking at what's traveling through our communities, and if there's lots of these trains passing by your community, that's probably an issue to raise with local politicians, where you have the most power anyway, where you have your voice heard the loudest, is at the local level. D.C. is flooded by so much corporate money. They're basically the root of the problem of why this issue is even happening. So at the local level, that's where citizens can exercise their power. That's what I recommend.
Well, you may get a kick out of this as we wrap up this conversation, for which I am very grateful, Steve. You may get a kick out of this. Right as I saw that this was happening, naturally, I ran right over to the CSX website, because I bear no great love for CSX in the first place, because they're the ones who haul away, who have hauled away in excess of 500 Appalachian mountains that have been blown to rubble and communities poisoned, and, well, you know everything that goes with mountaintop removal. So I ran right over to the CSX website just to check out what they were saying, and they were saying nothing. It took about an hour and a half before they acknowledged anything had happened on their website. But I happened to see that their banner that pops up the minute you log on is at CSX, and, kind of try not to laugh too loud, at CSX, every day is Earth Day.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, they're a step ahead of Plains All American, where at the Yorktown facility, where this stuff was headed, they haven't acknowledged anything yet. There's been kind of an oath of silence by them, even though I think it will soon come out through wider media that that's where the oil was headed.
Yeah, we don't know nothing about transporting no Bakken crude.
Yeah, we don't know any. Yeah, exactly. Instructions from the top, say nothing, hear nothing.
Exactly. Well, Steve Horn, thank you very much. I wish you as ever well in your endeavors. You're doing some great work, and every time something posts over at DSmog Blog, we try to get it up on the Horn website so that folks can read it. Because if one depends on the for-profit media for actual journalism, one is pretty well toast. And so we all really appreciate the work you're doing, because it's obvious that it's hard work. It's obvious that you're pouring your heart and your soul and your time into it, doing real journalism. And I don't know how often people say, "Hey, Steve, we're really glad you do what you do." But hey, Steve, we're really glad you do what you do.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate the kind words.
It's a pleasure. You have a wonderful evening. Still up there in Madison?
You too. I still am, yep.
All right, well, spring will get there, right?
At some point. Still winter, though.
Oh, Jesus, please, no.
Yeah, not really, but, yeah, not too warm. Yeah.
Well, I follow your running exploits, too, so it's been a tough winter, I know. Well, do take care and hold out for the warm stuff.
We'll do. Take care.
Bye now. Steve Horn from Madison, Wisconsin. Writer at DSmog Blog, and like I said, I try to always post his work at headonradionetwork.com. I hope that gives you, through all the buffering, I hope that gives you a broader sense of what is at stake with all of this. And, you know, just strap in and be ready when they say, "Well, that's why everybody needs a pipeline in the backyard." Because, again, it's a situation with one of those false dichotomies in it. Well, we can either transport this stuff by rail bombs, or we can transport this stuff by pipeline bomb. Which bomb would you like to have? And it never occurs to any of these folks that maybe there's a better way. Because money, that maybe we need to start, you know, using our great big human brains, start trying to figure out a way to live a so-called modern existence in a hydrocarbon-free fashion. I think, for instance, of Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, who is enamored of Tesla Motors and has passed that fascination along to me. I'd love to have one of those. By the end of 2015, there will be charging stations all across the United States so that you can get in your Tesla and drive it from coast to coast and never be inconvenienced any more than 30 minutes for recharging time at a Tesla supercharger, where, incidentally, the supercharging is always free. Can you imagine buying a gasoline-powered automobile where they tell you that the gasoline's always free? I mean, if one of these things costs $40,000, $50,000, the fuel cost is going to wipe that out pretty quickly, isn't it? Well, I'm pleased, thanks to Robert in Australia, I'm pleased to know that the link from Yahoo's Australian version, Yahoo News Australia, with the simple observation Robert offers of, "Jesus, Bob. Yeah, let's hope you're far enough away, Robert, that there's no Bakken crude to be found in the outback or anything. You don't want this stuff." reposting at Yahoo News Australia from Reuters. In its second oil train accident this year, it's only April, CSX said 15 cars on a train traveling from Chicago City to Virginia, big state, somewhere. I mean, just going to, you know, God knows we're not going to stop this thing in West Virginia. The meth tweakers will strip it. Then they'll probably snort the crude. I mean, you know, come on, hillbillies. Chicago City to Virginia, vaguely defined state. And isn't it interesting that they don't want to give you an end location for this? Well, I mean, not that I'm going to, you know, get all Alex Jones and start talking about false flags. But really. And then there's the smoke. A giant plume of black smoke, hot flames. And congratulations, let's talk about polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are the end product of the incomplete combustion of, you know, oil. Now, these things are nothing but just pure cancer, as are ultrafine particles, which, curiously, are also produced as a result of the incomplete combustion of hydrocarbons. And so all over Lynchburg, Virginia today, even if they couldn't see it, all over Lynchburg, Virginia today, and certainly the first responders, and most likely the little children who were over there in, what was it called, the Amazement Center or something, folks were breathing their cancer. I'm not talking about them being cigarette smokers. I'm talking about them just, the non-smokers were breathing them up some cancer today. And it doesn't take much to get you going. Probably takes less polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons to get that mutagenesis going. Then, you get the idea. I mean, it's bad enough we breathe this stuff because of the nature of the world we live in. Another reason I like Tesla Motors, no emissions. Yeah, I know. And then there's that whole zero to who knows what in who knows how little time instantaneous torque from an electric motor thing. But I'm off and gone again on my car fetish. Officials said there were no injuries. 350 people were, however, evacuated to a half-mile radius. Motorists and pedestrians were told to stay away from downtown. I'm sure journalists, too. It was pretty nearly at the city center. And, yeah, they shut down their city water supply. At least they figured out to do that. They're a few steps ahead of good old West Virginia American Water Company that way. And, yeah, the James River flows to the Chesapeake Bay. And there's a whole lot of James River to flow toward the Chesapeake Bay from Lynchburg. Because Lynchburg is kind of in the foothills of the Blue Ridge. You know, of Virginia. That gets sung about in Country Roads, Take Me Home Country Roads, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Yeah, Country Roads is, of course, a song ostensibly about West Virginia that's really about Virginia. Oh, never mind. Another ironic bit, I heard this when it was being broadcast live. Attorney John Francisco at the law firm of Edmonds and Williams told local TV station WSET that they're on the 19th floor of the something or another bank building where his law firm is located. He heard a loud noise that sounded like a tornado, which kind of tells you where we are in the second decade of the 21st century. It used to be that when you heard a tornado, you said it sounded like a freight train. Now the freight trains sound like tornadoes. Sheesh. Yes, Shorty. Shorty writes, hey, it's Shorty. You on tonight? That's what happens when everything buffers constantly. not knowing how many people my voice is reaching at this point in time, because you never know how many people go, oh, okay, well, I hear the Glockenspiel music. He ain't there. We are trying to crawl out of April to the good. There is a $100 challenge on the table from Jay Cruzen, which is still waiting for a response. Thus far, nobody. Don't make Jay Cruzen feel unloved. When people are willing to double your money, it's a good thing to take advantage of. Well. It is 11 minutes before the hour. So much to do with this here prayer meeting Wednesday. By the way, I'm going to do some more work this evening to try to solve this buffering issue. I wish I could tell you where it comes from or why, but I can't. Just a second. I'm just getting tons of email here saying, hey, Bob, you were there for a minute and then you're gone. So trying to answer these things. What else is there out there? Oh, let's see, the Republican Party screwed working people again today, filibustering a minimum wage increase. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the family values. You'll love this. This is one of those right-wing statements I got. It came from the Independent Women's Forum. Democrats' pledge to boost the federally mandated minimum wage is counterproductive to helping families on the brink. That's right. Families on the brink? Shove them. Let's end their misery. Today, a Democratic bill to raise the federally mandated minimum wage failed in a key procedural vote on the Senate floor. No, it didn't fail. A bunch of godforsaken, motherless, soulless, dirtbag repiglickens killed it. Failed in a key procedural vote on the Senate floor, 54-42. In a continued effort to set the record straight about how best to help women and families on the brink, Independent Women's Forum releases the following statements. Sabrina Schaefer, executive director of the Independent Women's Forum, said, progressives are promoting raising the... Clickens would still put this filth out there. Why, we're in good economic times. We can't cause that to crash and burn like a paralyzed falcon by giving those poors more money. The best way to help those struggling in today's economy is not to raise the minimum wage by a couple of dollars. That may mean a pay bump for some, but it would mean unemployment for hundreds of thousands of others. The last thing our government should be doing today is to make it more difficult for employers to create jobs and keep employees.
Right, because if we raise the minimum wage, the employers are just going to go to robots. You know, soulless, motherless. Wait, Republicans.
And then there's Rachel DiCarlo Curry, who's a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. And Rachel says, rather than destroy untold numbers of low-income jobs by increasing the minimum wage to $10.10, Congress should expand and improve the earned income tax credit as a way to help those working for low wages today. The EITC carries bipartisan support and has proven its ability to alleviate poverty, help unemployed people. It's a refundable credit, which means it can be delivered to beneficiaries, low-income workers, you know, the poors, as a direct payment of their net
federal income tax liability, if their net federal tax income tax liability is zero. So every year, once a year, we can just throw a little bit in their cute little tin cup that they rattle on the sidewalk, those poors. Aren't we wonderful? Yes, we are. Independent Women's Forum, go to hell. Stay there. God, you're disgusting. Yeah, so they did that. So the bomb train blew up. So last night, a bunch of, since it is prayer meeting Wednesday, a bunch of followers of the Prince of Peace went about the business of crucifying a fellow, horizontally, of course, and botched it. Yeah. You know, the Eighth Amendment protects, ostensibly, against cruel and unusual punishment. Now, those words were adopted, 1787, 1788, about 5 or 6 years before the introduction of the guillotine. Now, the guillotine is a really creepy-looking affair. Pretty horrifying, really. But we need to understand that the guillotine was invented by Dr. Guillotine because all the other previous methods of killing people in the name of the state, things like drawing and quartering, things like chopping heads off with really sort of sketchy axes, hanging, death by strangulation, being gut shot by a firing squad using muskets with smooth bore barrels that could go anywhere and the death could be miserable. All those things were within the purview of the framers of the Constitution, who said in the Eighth Amendment, let's not have any, and it wasn't just limited to execution. Let's have a new country that's going to be founded on principles of basic human decency. Well, except for that whole slavery thing, of course, 3/5, you know. And let's not have any cruel or unusual punishment. So last night in Oklahoma, Stan, who needs to change their state motto from we stole this place fair and square from the Indians to hangin's too good for them, because, and let's bear in mind, because you have to say this or the justice people, even the progressive ones, will get all pissy with you. Two people were slated for execution last night who did really heinous, awful, inhumane, brutal, filthy, rotten things. Killers. Just mean. Awful. Nobody was going to shed any alligator tears. But the Eighth Amendment is not written and say, it doesn't say there shall not be cruel and unusual punishment unless the person is really an awful human being. It says there won't be, in the United States of America, any cruel and unusual punishment. So, it has become increasingly difficult, maybe you know this, it has become increasingly difficult for states to come by the chemicals that they need to put down a human. Who was it? Mississippi was trying to get hold of some veterinary drugs that are used to put down, old Fido when his day has come. Yeah, Mississippi was it that wanted to treat its capital punishment inmates like animals? Oh, well, you know, it's Mississippi. I mean, they've got a history. But then along, Oklahoma couldn't come up with the right drugs anyway, so they said they had come up with a new cocktail that would, they hoped, work. And lawsuits were filed on behalf of the two individuals who were slated to become human experiments as to how to best kill people in the name of the people of the state of Oklahoma. And the lawsuits said, any kind of decent appreciation of or adherence to the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States dictates that we really, really, really do kind of need to make sure that this chemical cocktail we're using in the horizontal crucifixion is not cruel or unusual. And initially, the Supreme Court of the state of Oklahoma stand said, we think you're right. So let's find out what the cocktail is. Don't you love the Orwellian language, cocktail? It's kind of like the Orwellian language that was used with the bomb train that exploded in Lynchburg. It was confirmed that there was product in the river. Product being an Orwellian euphemism for a shit ton of oil, crude oil, black gold, Bakken tea. But cocktail. And the spring, and mocks native peoples. Mary Fallon, super Christian, follower of the Prince of Peace, saved by Jesus, believer that he was born of a virgin, the Son of God, that he ministered, that he was crucified, that he died on the cross, that he was buried, and that he rose again on the third day, and after 40 days ascended to the right hand of God. And therefore, when Mary Fallon breathes out, doesn't breathe in again, shuffles off this mortal coil, and goes off to heaven, we'll sit right there with Jesus H. Christ. Well, Mary Fallon and her right-wing lunatics in the legislature said, hey, Oklahoma Supreme Court, tell you what, you miserable heathen God haters who want us to not kill these two people, we'll impeach your ass and remove you from office, at which point the bold and brave decision makers of the Supreme Court of Oklahoma said, never mind, kill them. Good point, Devin. Ain't killing people without their consent cruel? Yeah, kind of is. Yeah, but those are, you know, some of those legal niceties that are not much cared for out there in boomer sooner land. So anyway, they get ready to execute dude number one. They roll him in. They put him on the gurney. You know, he's out. His arms are outstretched away from him. They've got him strapped down so they can crucify him horizontally. And they explain that, well, this crucifixion might take a little longer than the other crucifixions because it's a different cocktail. And then they inserted the lines in dude's arms, started them running, and it didn't work. It didn't work at all. He appeared to go unconscious, and they said, hey, he's unconscious. And then he rose up and said, man, something's wrong. At which point, the viewing window for the macabre people who wanted to watch a human being die and the members of the press who kind of had to be there was closed. Oopsie! So then, we're giving Orwellianism a workout tonight. In what can only be determined to be an Orwellian act, the state of Oklahoma then hauled the guy they were trying to kill off to the hospital, at which point the drugs that they were giving him caused him to go into massive myocardial infarction. And so, in essence, the people of the state of Oklahoma, via their elected representatives who overran the rule of law, tortured a man to death last night. Dig? No, really. Now, understand, we've got to consider all of this within the framework of cruel and unusual punishment. So, Sherman set the Wayback Machine for the summer of 1787. Let's have a sit down with Constitutional Convention President G. Washington, Constitutional Convention delegate, philosopher, inventor, and revered old man of the convention, B. Franklin. Let's invite little diminutive Jenny Madison and Caribbean bastard elitist Alexander Hamilton. Let's invite them all into the room. Let's invite George Mason into the room. Let's get a real consensus here. Hey, guys. Yeah, I know. I know. Medical science has not gotten that far. You're still bleeding people to heal them and putting leeches on them. Listen, George, when they come to you and they say, we think if we bleed you a little bit more, you'll feel better, tell them no. Tell them no, George. Ben, you know, would you have a word with Dr. Rush? Putting mercury in medicine is not a good idea. Saying. But anyway, guys, yes, if you want to toast each other with a little glass of claret, that's fine by me. I mean, you only drink about, you know, 4 liters of the stuff anyway. It's a modern miracle. There aren't wine stains on the document. Guys, I'm sure you've met somebody who said he has chest pains sometimes, and every now and then he'll kind of grab his chest, and when it's time to check out, he'll say his left arm's going numb, and then he starts gasping, and he can't breathe, and he's hurting real bad, and he turns blue, and his tongue sticks out of his mouth. Do you guys call that a heart attack still? You do? Okay. So I know you're all debating these here amendments, and number eight's the one I want to talk about, guys. That cruel and unusual punishment you're talking about. Could we have a talk? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we think it would be unfair, for instance, to take a man convicted of murder and let him be torn asunder by a group of heathen slaves.
Really? That'd be a bad thing?
Mm-hmm.
Guys, how would you go about executing a slave you felt like you needed to kill?
Well, you know, we'd probably whip him to death.
So whipping is not unusual?
No, whipping's not unusual. Mercy sakes, I must say, there at Mount Vernon, I've had to do it a few times myself. It ain't necessarily pleasant, but you got to keep them in line.
Mr. Franklin, how do you feel about executions?
Well, you know, my good man, I don't give it a great deal of thought, but I do think it would be a bit unusual to perhaps strap him to one of my kites and wait for the lightning to take him down.
Oh, really, Ben?
Oh, I do believe.
Okay, guys, so like with that heart attack we were talking about, would it be unusual and maybe even cruel to kill a person by making him have a heart attack?
My word, that does sound odd.
You know, I think that might be cruel. I've never seen anyone who enjoyed those. Worse than hanging?
Well, I do believe so.
How about head lopping?
Well, we haven't done any head lopping here in a while.
Tearing apart by horses?
No, we gave that up. See, we think that's kind of cruel.
Okay, so torturing a guy into a heart attack, that's nothing you guys want to be associated with.
Land sakes, no.
Yeah, okay. Oklahoma. Yeah, and then of course they postponed the execution of the second guy because they want to make sure they kill him good. And of course this overlooks the whole question of rehabilitation. Can a person become better? Mental state, I mean, fair trials. But you know what? It's America. We're still executing people in the second decade of the 21st century when we, theoretically at least, according to all the lies that I was told as a child growing up, ought to be working on getting to that whole humane Star Trek civilization thing. Guess not. So we've got all that and more to consider on this prayer meeting Wednesday edition of the Horn. Big thanks. We're getting very close. We're within $100 to $125 of getting out of the hole and finishing April in decent shape. Thank you, one and all, very much. We have buffered up again. Son of a gun. Okay, starting. Restarting. We buffered up and kicked over to the Glockenspiel music, and in the chat room, Tim from L.A. asked, "What's this song?" And our buddy Horst answered, "Eine Kleine Verdampt Music." Bless you guys for your patience. I appreciate it. If I could make this stop, I would. I mean, and here I sit with no tequila and no straw. So thank you. Thank you very much for helping us get close to closing the hole. Thank you. We'll take a break. And open the lines, 304-658-3333. Via Skype, if you want to jump in that way, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, on Skype. If you've never done that, just send me a contact request. We'll get it going right away. You're listening to Conversation Radio, midweek prayer meeting Wednesday edition. And we'll be right back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hard time, yeah, every way you go, and it harder than ever been before. And the people are drifting door to door, can't find no heaven, I don't care where they go. Say you ain't money, you better be sure, these hard times will drive you from door to door.
Seemed appropriate. Hard time killing room floor. From the original soundtrack to one of my favorite films, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
It is 17 minutes past the hour, and I want to send thanks out to Andrew. Andrew just took us down to $85 to go to finish filling in the hole for the month of April. Thank you very much, Andrew. By the way, Robert points out from Australia, the last execution in Australia was in 1968. Ronald Ryan, 46 years ago. The idea of reintroducing the death penalty has never come up again. You just go to jail for everything you do. Yeah. I don't know why. You know, we had a moratorium on the death penalty for a while. Who brought it back? Hey, look, Republicans and Southerners. I'll be damned. Because, you know, we ain't got no deterrent to killing folk. The only problem is that study after study after study after study has been done on the death penalty. And it doesn't deter anybody. Because if one is, for instance, mentally ill, one does not understand the consequences of one's act, and one is not acting rationally in the first place when one does one's killing. The same goes for being developmentally delayed. If one is in the heat of passion, which we often refer to as second-degree murder, ain't nothing going to stop you. Because it's in you and it's in the situation. And then on the other hand, let's say you're one of those first degree types who plans out a killing. Well, it's not going to deter you either, because you're probably a psychopath or a sociopath, and it not much slows them folks down at all. Yeah. See how it works? All right. Let's go to the phone lines, 304-658-3333, see what's on y'all's minds. Hey, welcome to the program.
I lead off with the fat man. You closed up with him last night, and you get him back today.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the way karma works, Bill. You know, you didn't have a lot of time last night, so.
Well, karma is a south suburb of Cleveland, I think. So that's karma. I get confused.
Yeah, I was thinking about you and the other members of the Horn family up in that neck of the woods. Y'all had tornado watches. By God, you did, yeah. But we're still here. I'll get the stream going again. Of course, it makes it...
Okay, I'll sit here and wait while you work. I don't
want to
get...
No. I'm a confirmed multitasker. I can do many things at one time.
I used to be able to.
I mean, sometimes I can drink tequila and... Well, never mind. We won't go there. Son of a gun.
Who is the dark Germanic stuff?
Oh, the Bach?
Yeah. Well, Bach was in springtime. My dad bought me a Bach beer and said it was...
Yeah, or, yeah, your Bach, your Dunkels, your Dunkelweizens. Yeah.
Yeah, they're cleaning out the tanks every spring. Yeah, like maybe once upon a time they did, you know.
Yeah, now it's deliberate.
A couple of things have gotten me today. One of them was reading a thing on the Korean War, and there was two regiments. The 27th and the 31st were there, and the 20th had the nickname of Wolfhounds. The 31st had a nickname of Polar Bears, although the 31st was organized in Manila area within 10 years of the end of the Spanish insurrection, you know, the one that they don't call the war, when we fought against Aguinaldo and the people in the Philippines thought they were going to get their freedom from when we took the islands from Spain, you know, so they were going to be free. Anyway, and people said, well, how'd they get those names? I said, well, the 27th was sent over, maybe as far as Murmansk or someplace in the Soviet Union or in the form of this during the Russian Revolution to guard supplies ostensibly. And the polar bears came in at the Siberian end of the show, you know, at the other side of the country. And not Murmansk, what was it? Anyway, that's how they got their nicknames. Guarding supplies, so if
I'll be darned.
The Soviets couldn't get a hold of them, or the Reds couldn't get them. ostensibly that's what they were there for, to guard, to get our money back by shipping the stuff back home. But I think they were there maybe for another reason, Bob.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, that's the strange event for today. Otherwise, things are peaceful. Every time I go to look for a cooking utensil, I throw a hemorrhage because these guys might have thought they were being helpful, but helpful is not throwing out cooking items, cooking utensils. And I used to have a gimmick that you put in the microwave and you could throw some bacon in there.
Oh, one of those little plastic pans with the ridges on it, and you put a paper towel on, the bacon on, and then you put the paper towel over top?
Yeah.
You know what? I guess this is going to mark me as a hopeless barbarian. I like microwaved bacon.
It's quick, and it's done better. What it amounts to.
Well, yeah, and I mean, when I don't much care for skillet fried bacon at all, Bill, because it's too easy to turn it into sort of carbon.
Yeah, you either char it or you eat it raw. And either way.
Bacon sushi. Wait a minute. Slow down. You just invented something. Wait. Bacon sushi.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
There you go. Me and sushi, you're my fish cooked. I got a problem there, you know. I tell you, one vacation I was scheduled to go was Kentucky Lake was a place I was looking at, but something on the Tennessee Kentucky border, big reservoir down there that produces good crappie. I happen to like that fish. Don't ask me why.
You're not alone.
People see the spelling of it and they say, "What's the matter with you?" They don't pronounce it correctly. But they were, I got to be a master of using the European technique of the slip rig bobber, where you can go from 2 feet to 10, you know, and still have that, if you weight that bobber just right, it would be laying slightly backwards, and as soon as a fish touched it, it would stand upright. And as soon as you saw that bobber up in the air, and the next thing you know, it was disappearing below the water.
Hit it.
Set it. Right, exactly. I mean, there's Bob, I don't give a damn. It seems to be, I don't care if it's driving a nail. There's a way to do it, and there's a way not to.
Right. You might be interested to know this. A while back, I read a wonderful piece of nonfiction simply called Hemingway's Boat. And I'll probably get email when I admit that I'm a big Ernest Hemingway fan. But he had a boat. It was called the Pilar, and he kept it in Key West, and he kept it in Cuba, and he would go across the. And apparently, he was the father of changing the way that one fished for tuna out in the Gulf Stream. Instead of sitting there and trolling and trolling and trolling, and the term he used, it was kind of like what you're describing with the crappie. He said, you know, you can't run them like you let marlin run. He said, you got to horse them.
Yep.
And just, you know, just work them to death right into the boat, and you can't sit there and fool around, or they'll break your line. And so, yeah, fishing fun. Oh, now I'm thinking about yummy tuna.
Well, the other thing I used to like was they were running a type of salmon here in the rivers, and they were dying every 2 years. And then they went to the so-called steelhead trout, which I think is from the same family, but they live a lot longer. And that was but did you catch those things maybe 8 or 10 pounds? I remember catching 3 or 4 of them in an hour and just releasing them one after another. And that's what maybe you were, and bass, Bob, I'd never eat a bass. A largemouth bass was not to be eaten.
You know, I don't know a lot of people who do, Bill.
Yeah.
And not so much largemouth, but most of the fishermen I know around here are into the smallies, and they're into it for, you know, sport and trophy purposes.
Yeah. Well, I hit the jackpot my last good trip to Chautauqua. I hit a 7-pound smallie, and then one was between 6 and 7 on my next cast. But one of your neighbors from Kentucky had taught me how to use the safety pin spinnerbait, and that thing produced constantly for me. It was a hobby I picked up in my 40s. Well, because the hobby I had through my 30s cost me my first marriage. That was a bad hobby to have. But while you're in the music business, certain hobbies get...
Well, hobbies, occupational hazards, right? Yeah, one man's nightshirt.
You were in radio. I'm sure you saw it plenty. I don't know. Although you were always playing religious music.
Oh, no, not always. That was just my beginning. And then I moved over into adult contemporary top 40 stuff. That's what I did mostly when I was still growing up in Northwest Alabama.
The guy you worked for was a legend, buddy.
Yeah, but I tell you what, they were not going to be playing any hardcore rock and roll on that station. I mean, it was all adult contemporary top 40, you know, Bee Gees, every now and then. Yeah. I remember when...
Because it's, you know, stylistically, you know?
Right. Well, yeah.
There you go.
Although, by some metrics, it's mild now.
Here, where do I sign the application? Decent show she was on, that the other young lady who shot yet. It ain't good, but it ain't shot yet. Yeah, just and then even the woman who, on that show who was a Broadway actress, was she red-headed woman?
Yeah,
young lady.
Name I can't remember.
Yeah, and of course the custodian was the guy off the Steve Allen show. Oh, I forget who he was, but he was. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the old Steve Allen things with a man on the street and.
Yeah, I've seen some clips. It's a little before my time.
On and on, yeah. What?
I said I've seen clips. It's a little before my time.
Yeah, well, he was funny. Alan was a genius. I haven't been able to hook on with these late night guys. Of course, they didn't bring a TV with them. They left my TV at home, although, as I say, it was a working antique. I mean, why not? I had fixed it enough times myself. It was a TV that every time you turned it on, you knew it was old because there was two white heavyweight fighters fighting in the ring. You know, that's pretty old.
Yeah, he'll be here all week.
That's another thing. You try to explain what boxing was like in the Depression. You know, there were so many Jewish lightweight fighters fighting out of New York City in those days because it was a way to put food on the table.
Well, and it was a way up and out, sure.
Yeah. That's why I recommend a book, Only the Ball Was White, so you get a real look at the black major leagues and what a thing it was. It was, you're still off, huh?
No, I've come and gone.
Oh, yeah? I'm not getting you.
In fact, I've never even buffered up here. I've been sending all along.
Oh, good. I don't know what it is why I'm losing you so much. Is it my setup, you think?
Oh, no. It's our inability to get a stream out.
Yeah. And it's a money situation with the repair of the equipment?
No, this isn't. This is some sort of weird technology thing. I'm not gonna wander off into the weeds, but it's just strange.
You know, my problem is I knew so much to a point with television and amplifier repair and for a while I was building this stuff with an old system and I'm still running an old system. What's the one that you were running for so long? The one everybody loves?
Yeah, XP.
Yeah, XP. I have two computers with XP. One of them is not set up right now, and my number one friend and computer ace, I have two of them, and both of them are, believe it or not, connected with the Horn Radio Network. It's the kind of people you have listening over and over and over. That was quite the thing tonight, because the railroads, I remember, well, this whole idea of these railroads that are running under the, like, what's the one that used to be the Chesapeake in Ohio? What the hell is it called now?
Oh, that's CSX. That's the folks who had the bomb train go off in Lynchburg, Virginia today.
Yeah. And they're just is happening left and right. It's not my imagination.
Yeah, my great grandfather laid the CSX rail through the through much of West Virginia.
Yeah.
So there's a history there.
Well, the B&O was in business during the Civil War because it was hit many times by raiders, you know, because it was the main connection between the West, so-called West Ohio, for instance, and D.C. The B&O was on the battle line between Lee and fill in the blank, you know. On the northern side, you got to fill in the blank until, I think George Meade gave him enough to handle. Of course, Lee, you know, Lee sent 20,000 men plus James Longstreet and Hood out west before Chickamauga. So, I mean, but that was the amazing thing. The Union Army took the 11th and 12th Corps from Virginia and had them sitting down south of the Tennessee River in about 10 or 12 days, with every horse and wagon and everything else they needed to go to war. They're the ones that Hooker led on Lookout Mountain, you know, the Battle of the Clouds, as they called it.
Right, yeah. You ever been down that way, Bill?
No, I have never made it. I was playing in Knoxville about 10 years ago with some people, and I wanted so desperately to go. But the guy that was there with me, he was visiting friends that lived down there in the mountain areas. And that's an area that, you know, that area during the Civil War was very much not in love with the Confederacy. A lot of small farmers.
Oh, East Tennessee, that's one of the ironies. East Tennessee was very Union friendly.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it's a hotbed of pro-Republican, wild-eyed, radical, neo-Confederate extremism.
Well, I've always had a problem after reading Grapes of Wrath. What's the area at the end of 66 where some great country performers were living and working?
Bakersfield.
Yeah, Bakersfield. And they never realized how they got out there or why they got out there. They got out there, and what a treatment they got going across country, Bob. Just terrible.
Well, here's a little bit of irony for you, Bill. You're familiar with the Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, yes.
You know, in the very beginning of the Grapes of Wrath, Tom Joad gets out of prison in Oklahoma.
Yep.
The prison that Tom Joad gets out of in Oklahoma is the very same prison where they botched the execution last night. That's how old that facility is.
Out of the McAllister pen is the way the Woody Guthrie song went. Yep. Was that the same place, huh?
Apparently so.
Jesus Christ.
What a hateful bunch of...
Just,
yeah.
This capital punishment stuff, I don't know. I can't buy it because it doesn't work half the time. And I don't know what Dr. Bill would say, but to me it falls under the cruel and unusual punishment idea.
Well, it has to. If you're executing a person, like I said earlier, Bill, the whole process whereby Oklahoma bullied its Supreme Court into allowing them to kill the two black men and then botched the execution, the whole thing is cruel and unusual. The framers of the Constitution would have found the idea of blowing off the Constitution altogether to be unusual in and of itself, because they were putting together a framework of laws that would be the operative enabling legislation for the young country. And so Mary Fallon and her pet right-wing weirdo teabag and booger-eating legislature said, screw the law. We're going to kill these fellers.
You just reminded me of something. Mary Fallon. If I'm not mistaken, if somebody can backtrack on the computer faster than me, it wouldn't take much. Somebody could do that with paper and pencil faster than I can do it on a computer. But I believe Mary Fallon was a name attributed to the woman who was known as Typhoid Mary at one point in time.
I think that may have been a different spelling. This is F-A-L-L-I-N.
Okay.
And she's a right-wing, fundamentalist, evangelical, who did such a good job of raising her daughter that in Oklahoma, she makes fun of Native peoples.
Right, Oklahoma, huh?
Yeah, yeah, she went out and got a glamour shot done of herself, done up really, really pale-faced, with bright red lipstick in profile, wearing a Plains Indians ceremonial feather headdress.
Oh, brother.
And then when people criticized her for it, she called the Native people sheep, and her boyfriend flipped them off at a concert. Man, there's some Christian family values, right?
Oh, of course. When I was working that job in Knoxville, there was a convention, Native Americans, and they were kind of interesting to talk to on the breaks, because I don't, you know, in the big city, we didn't see that many folks, you know. But, I mean, one of my first books was a study of Native Americans, which wasn't too bad. It wasn't prejudicial. It talked about the lifestyles of the different that existed in the different type parts of the country, like the Native Americans from the Canadian-U.S. border and up in New York State. They live much differently than the Seminoles in Florida, obviously. You know, you don't think about it, but yeah, they had to because of the difference in what you had to deal with on a daily basis, you know. And but you know, I think about I think of Andrew Jackson once in a while, and his handling of South Carolina when that thing hit the fan the first time. When he was president?
What was that? 1828 or so?
Yeah.
You're talking about the whole nullification crisis when he said he would go to South Carolina and hang every one of the treasonous bastards by the neck till they were dead?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, that's an unusual attitude for a man out of Tennessee, wouldn't it be?
Well, but he also said, and I forget which Supreme Court decision it was, but he said of John Marshall has made his decision, now let him enforce it.
Well, it's kind of true in some ways. You can talk all you want to, and there are people who are going to, especially in those days, that bunch of people were really close to, the closer you got to the frontier type thinking, the nastier people could get. And the quicker they are to reach for that shooting iron, you know.
Yeah.
That's what makes me think sometimes they were going backwards. The story you were telling, was it last night, the story you were telling about the guy at the baseball game?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Georgia. Hey, you want to see my gun? I got a gun. Not a darn thing you can do about my gun. I'm going to show you my gun.
See, he should have been arrested at that point, at least hit with some kind of...
But they couldn't, Bill. That's the whole thing. They had Nathan Deal, the governor of Georgia, had signed into law the take your gun to the airport, the bar, and church bill.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And nobody could touch him.
You keep coming up with the stories about the pools. Because I used to laugh at the people who were carrying those damned automatics, and they'd fall out of their coat and go off, because they had a damn, not only were they carrying an automatic, they had a goddamn bullet in the chamber. It's like, folks.
You think this guy didn't have a bullet in the chamber?
Oh, I know. Well, if he had a...
I mean, now, if you want a righteous giggle, this law allows you to take a gun just about anywhere in the world. In Georgia, you can take it, except for one place.
Where? The funeral home?
Oh, no. You can take it to a funeral home, too. But the legislators, all of whom fulminated about how we got to protect freedom and
you know, Wolverines, and we gotta guarantee your Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms in Georgia, cause we's the repository of freedom in America. All those legislators who got up and spoke and fulminated and prevaricated and pontificated about all that hoopla, the one place the law does not allow an upstanding, God-fearing, Jesus-loving, Bible-believing, gun-toting Christian to take his gun in Georgia is the Georgia legislature, the state capital of Georgia. Sorry, no guns here. Well, hell, we're going to gun up the state. What do you want to do? Let them come in here and blow us away? They're all nuts. Right?
Yeah, I guess that's what they're telling you. Because it's the truth. I mean, of course, I can vaguely remember childhood when a bunch of people went after Truman and a few other folks down in D.C. Some folks from the beautiful island of Puerto Rico who decided that they didn't want to be part of the United States that badly. They wanted their individual freedom, and some of these guys went off the deep end and shot it out. Some guys made it as far as the White House. They shot a White House guard to death, I think, if my memory is correct. Which, I keep asking myself that as the years go on, buddy. Let's see, do I have pants on? Yeah, goddamn, I can go out. I got pants on. I mean, it's just the way it goes after a while, but you keep... And this is why I suppose I bore people with some of these historic facts, but folks, what I'm trying to say, and Bob, I think you'll agree with me, is that stuff keeps repeating itself over and over. And they say, who shows up at Munich?
Well, I mean, yeah, look at Nevada, okay? You have armed idiots who have set up so-called checkpoints on public roads. We're not talking about Craven Bundy's damn driveway. We're talking about the public roads of the people of Nevada and the United States of America, and they're running checkpoints.
That's a felony, Bob. I'm sorry to say it, but under the law, that's a felony.
But we can't go arrest them because they're precious, and they're Wolverines, and they're protecting freedom.
Yeah. Well, you keep talking about the Wolverines. That's a book called L.A. Confidential, written by a guy named James Ellroy.
Oh, I love that book. I love the movie version, too.
And wasn't there a guy wearing a false set of teeth like a Wolverine?
I don't remember.
I'm trying to, because I've read a few things by Ellroy, and that might have been one of them. That poor guy had enough trouble. His mother was found dead on the street, shot to death. And, I mean, the background of these writers, some of them are really good. So the guy from Detroit that I like, Esselman, he was a police beat reporter for the newspaper in Detroit. You know, remember when they used to have newspapers?
Yeah. I remember my father reading them.
Yes. It's one of those things. Well, I'm not going to keep you because I hope you've got some other folks ready to...
Couple of lights blinking.
To pay me back for Mr. Stress, well-known harmonica player and manure spreader. You know, it's the way it goes. Anyway, stay out of trouble. Stay on the air, please.
We're trying. I'm trying. God knows.
I never thought I'd get hung up on listening to a guy broadcasting from a room in his house, Bob, but you've done it, so.
Well, we at least pretend this is a studio, so yeah.
Well, I forget who it was now on the Friday night guy that straightened me out on the fact that I wasn't hallucinating in 1975 or so when I heard the Lincoln. Yeah, he thought he was. Nixon had put the Strategic Command, Air Command, up in the air. He was out maintaining planes. Who was it, Doug?
Oh, that was Sparky.
Sparky, yeah, he's the guy who kind of runs it. I wish I could get a hold of that thing, but my experts tell me these computers might not handle it. So,
well, and we really do need to find somebody who can load Windows 7 on your machines, because there are, I posted a story over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There are some vulnerabilities involved with Internet Explorer and so forth that puts your machines at some risk. So maybe somehow or another we can get 7 on your machine.
Virus, you know, a one good antivirus, but the other thing is this system is just getting old, and there's no way around it. As you know, it's getting so old that I think the Cleveland Browns just won the division title. So that's pretty old. That's what spoiled me so much, Bob. I mean, when I from 50 all the way through 55, to win that division year after year. And when Paul got fired, when I don't know if I probably said this before, but when Brown got fired, it was in the middle of a newspaper strike. And this is, you know, it's not, Art Modell did a wonderful thing for professional football when it came to television. But he's not real well liked by a lot of the older. And I'm getting into that age where I'm one of the old fans now, you know. Remember the first time I went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame and looked around and said, there's about six or seven guys that were playing when I was a kid who were down here now. And then Pittsburgh's first big coach was a guy that went to the same high school I went to. So
yeah, you know. Noel. Right. All right, Bill. Well, we will talk soon. Listen, when you hang up, just restart your streamer player, and you'll have the program without a problem.
Oh, I got one more thing here. I'm just reading this thing on the Korean War, and one of the guys who was on a staff of a guy that nobody liked too much, his name was Alexander Haig. Ring any bells?
Yeah, the guy with the tiger tattoo on his ass.
Yeah,
I'm in charge here.
Yeah, he was just a young man on the staff of, what the hell was the guy's name? The guy that Grant put in, MacArthur put in charge of the Marines and the, in fact, our Marine buddy because if it wasn't for the general the Marines had, the guy that when he was asked about the retreat, he said, retreat hell, we had to fight our way out backwards, and that's exactly what happened up at Chosin Reservoir.
Yep.
We have a listener who would know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Anyway, you take care.
All right, you be good. Take care, Bill. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Good night.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Onward we go. Hey, before I go back to the phones, good news. Getting there closer and closer and closer. Thanks going out to Asa, who has taken us down to, let's see, where were we? Let's see, Andrew took us down to, got to do the math again. And Andrew had a message. He said, Bob, since I'm now seeing the light at the top of my own financial hole, I thought I'd help out the horn a bit. By the way, I'm really curious to hear from the beginning Dr. Bill's explanation. Well, it's up there. It's at White Rose Society, so you should be able to get the podcast. Andrew took us down to $85 to go to fill in the hole, and then Asa took us down to $60 to fill in the hole, and Sal took us down to $55 to finish filling in the April hole. It can be done. It surely can be done. Thank you. Jim with an observation. He says, if they insist upon the death penalty, use the firing squad. Hell, it's more merciful than present means. Yeah, and that's the thing you get into. Even the notion of cruel and unusual punishment is a sort of philosophical statement that just because we're going to take somebody's life, we'd at least like to feel like we didn't torture him to death in the process, him or her. Although I don't know if even that's operative in the United States anymore when you've got the likes of Godzilla from Wasilla, the half-baked Alaskan, Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, Sarah Palin, crowing, yeah, I'd teach the terrorists that waterboarding is how we baptize terrorists. I don't, you know. Jesus. I think we enjoy torture now. I mean, we've got an Afghan torturer living in a neighborhood in L.A. that we know about and are happy to have him. Oh, well. Modern firing squad probably is about as, you know, just blow the heart up in the dude's chest and have done. Don't torture him till it happens. God almighty. Let's keep it rolling and go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Edward.
Yes, I just want to let you
know. Congratulations. Let me say that straight off the bat.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I was going to tell you that we celebrated our one-week anniversary, and we didn't kill each other.
You know what? You really can't overstate the newlyweds not deciding to engage in self-help separation at 1 week in. I mean, that's a big moment. That is cause for celebration, Edward.
Well, anyhow, all of a sudden it dawned on me with a very close-knit area around here, there are two other of our friends who have done the same thing. So there are three of us in the neighborhood. Ain't that something?
Well, you know, traditional family values have just gone right down the toilet in your neighborhood, haven't they, Edward?
I know. That's such a... Isn't that terrible?
Have all the hetero couples filed for divorce yet?
I don't know.
I mean, they kind of have to. I mean, you've destroyed marriage, at least in your neighborhood, Edward, you and those other couples.
Well, I don't know. I see all these people walking by with their wives and their strollers with the babies in them. I don't think we've done too much.
Well, you're not trying.
Well, damn. Well, I do my best.
So was it just a day trip over and done and the quiet little affair? Or, I mean,
we flew to Albuquerque on Monday, checked into the motel, went over to the clerk's office, and got our papers and everything. Only cost $25. It's very cheap there. And the thing is getting there and back and the hotel room and all that stuff. It was a $840 round trip on the plane, and the hotel was $190 a night, and it gets expensive. But fortunately, we could afford it, and a whole lot of people can't. And that's the big problem right there.
Well, it is. And you know what? In many ways, I was talking the other night with Sandra. They're trying to close the last women's reproductive health care clinic in Mississippi, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Because wealthy white Mississippians, when Precious Lumpkin has one of those little inconveniences,
mm-hmm.
now she'll be able to fly off to civilization and get it taken care of.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's the same thing with marriage equality. What if you can't go to Albuquerque or Des Moines? Or, you know, a state that recognizes marriage equality.
Or California or wherever. Yeah, I know. I know. Oh, well.
But I am awful happy for you two.
Well, thank you.
Were there pastries involved? I mean, good cake, anything? I mean, help me out here.
Oh, heavens no. It was all done in our hotel room. And this wonderful lady, she's a reverend, non-denominational. And she and her husband came and married us, and she's authorized to marry people there in New Mexico. And then we went to our friends that were there. Some friends came up from Alpine, Texas, to Albuquerque, and we went out to dinner, and I was amazed. I didn't see the name of the restaurant. And, of course, I'm a law librarian, a retired one, and the name of the restaurant was The Library. So, anyway.
Apropos, to say the least.
I thought it was, too. But, I'm glad we did it. And now we've got to go back to our lawyer and have some things done to our legal things, because he says now that we are married, we have to have a quick claim deed to the property so we won't have to go to probate or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, legal things up one side and down the other. And believe me, the lawyers are not cheap.
Oh, no. And see, that's one of the things that has been overlooked in the whole marriage equality discussion, Edward, is that this is great for lawyers because it has essentially doubled and... Now, I'm not going to say this to a newlywed. Never mind. Forget I mentioned anything.
Well, I shouldn't tell you this, but we have to have them do the quit claim deed, and all our other work, we just got a bill for $3,200.
I guess
ain't
that's
that something.
Ain't that love?
Well, let me tell you, in Texas and Dallas, the lawyers do not work cheap.
No, Abraham Lincoln said a lawyer's time and advice is his stock in trade.
That's right.
And I guess the stock is booming, Edward.
I think it's booming here. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, the lady who married us told us that she had already done 3 weddings from people in Dallas. I don't know who they are, but she's done them.
Maybe it's those other two couples on your block.
No, it's not them, because I asked. one went to Massachusetts, the other one went somewhere else, and no, it wasn't them. So anyway, they sort of are flocking out to Albuquerque.
Don't say flocking, Edward. Don't say flocking. The Horn Family Commune's mind runs in the gutter.
Oh, whatever.
I mean, they're still telling each other the cockroach joke.
Oh, Lord and me.
Edward, you have yourself a wonderful evening. We are all just tickled for you and your partner, and we're just happy as can be.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that, and I love y'all.
Well, we love you, too. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The happy newlywed, Edward, calling from Dallas. And there will be no flocking on the horn. I said flocking. Thanks, Edward. Let's keep things going. Again, we are down to only $55 to go to finish out the month of April to the good. Well, you know, at even, actually. We've got an hour to finish it in. So thank you all very much who have gotten us here, and thank you very much if you can help us get us where we're going. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Just sitting here listening to you talk about the crumbling infrastructure and wondering what the Obama presidency could have been if he could have gotten some sort of building program.
Well, do you remember that ambitious railroad program he put out at the very beginning of his first term?
Yeah, well, there were so many things that the Republicans and the Dinos, whatever Democrats in name only, were against. It's not even funny to me. I remember
when Blanche Lincoln and Mary Landrieu, both allegedly Democrats, killed the Employee Free Choice Act within the first year of Obama's first term. He wanted it, Harry Reid wanted it, but the senator from Walmart said, not so much.
That's Mary Landrieu?
No, that would be Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas.
But
Mary jumped in, and so did a few of those other, belly crawlers.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I got to vote for, hopefully somehow I'll win the lottery or get out of here. But if I'm still here, I'll have to vote for Landrieu. I can't vote for a freaking Republican.
Oh, damn, Skippy, I understand. I've been lucky so far. I've been in safe elections. I have never cast a vote in favor of Joe Manchin, and
right.
I don't plan on it. Now, come this November, I'll have a choice between Natalie Tennant and Shelley Moore. Archmore in a bad wig Capito, and I guess I'll vote for Natalie, but that woman absolutely refuses to put any separation between her and Shelley Moore. I mean, you can't get the woman to even acknowledge that we got a health crisis in Appalachia that's brought about in our mountaintop removal communities. What the does a human being have to do?
I know, it's frustrating. I guess that's why I couldn't, or you or I, I'm putting you in the same class as me, if we tried to run for office, we couldn't even be elected dog catchers.
Oh, hell no.
We couldn't even get the funding to begin with, because our ideas would be so anti-capitalistic. And I'm really getting sick of capitalism real quick. I guess I've been listening to you and Malloy too long, but I see it as a real problem for society and humanity in general. I mean, I think you said it, and, you know, Malloy said it, and then I watch, you know, I watch a little bit of the other channels, and they talk about how groovy and great it is, and it's like, you know, I'm like, oh, contraire, it's not as groovy and great as you think. I mean,
oh no, I saw a guy on Facebook a few days ago who said, capitalism has improved the lives and saved the lives of millions around the world. And when you see something there in print and you're a reader of words and everything, how do you even respond to that?
Yeah.
I mean, and not for want of things to respond with, but you know that anybody who's willing to type something like that and own it, Jim, that person is beyond reach. They're beyond hope. You could educate all day long, and they'd go, yeah, but capitalism's created our wonderful way of life. Jesus.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they drank the Kool-Aid. They're, you know, they're just waiting for the poison to kick in, and then they're going to be surprised when they're dead, you know, when... I mean, it's like even my brother, one of my brothers even said, it kind of blew me away that he said it a couple of weeks ago, but he was saying in about 15 or 20 years, and maybe this is just something about people in their 50s seeing that their, you know, their existence is probably going to be over, close to over in 20 years or so, but, you know, he didn't basically see where society was going to go to after, you know, another 20 years, how it could last another 20 years. I'm just wondering if that's ego, you know, my existence stops, ergo society, humanity must stop, you know.
Well, it's all Louis XIV who said of his own demise, après moi le déluge, you know, after me comes the flood.
Right. Yeah. But I just found it interesting, him even kind of acknowledging something like that, because he just thinks, ooh, just hard work and everybody can just pull themselves up. It's just like, nah, if you're working at Walmart, you start out at the bottom at Walmart, you were like 1 out of 10 chance of maybe moving up, getting into so-called management, and probably 1 out of 100 even going much higher.
Oh, it's probably more like 1 in 10,000 of ever making to a... Because, you know what, being manager at Wally World is actually a... It's a pretty tasty slot, but the problem is you have to absolutely subsume your morals and your conscience to your desire to make money and serve at the corporate altar. I mean, you've got to treat people like crap to be a manager at Wally World.
Bob, it's like that every place, just about. That's exactly how it is. I mean, I used to work at the Venetian. And it's just like, I'd get a write-up or this, I'd go into it, and it was just trying to, you know, you'd say, well, da-da-da, and you'd think you'd have a good argument, but it wouldn't matter. Even if you had a good argument or a good reason for doing something, the company from that level, and that's just lower mid-level management, would never admit wrong, and you just had to say it. Now, like where I'm working now in Louisianistan, it's I've noticed the same thing. You know, it's just,
well, it's been the whole American the American employment experience has been turned into a sort of piranha pool where the only thing there, and I hate to that's just wrong to refer to workers as piranha, but it's a pool where the only way to survive is to eat the other people in the pool with you. It is a sort of enforced cannibalism.
Oh yeah, and they openly and quietly, what's the word? Not blindly, invisibly promote that. Well, and if you're not aware of that, then you will be eaten. I mean, it's really ridiculous, you know. But, I mean, I don't have to tell you. I mean, you've been in the radio biz. I'm sure you've seen that. It's like I remember listening to when I first started getting into your cup, I don't know, 6, 8, 9 months ago, a year, whatever. I went back. I was listening to some of your old shows. I was listening. And I just picked one from way, went into the back machine. It was like 05, 06. And it was cosmically inspired that I picked this one. But it happened to be when you got your 2 weeks' notice from your job.
Oh, that would have been June of 2005.
That's it. And that's just, and you were saying, well, we'll do something on the internet, because I was trying to, catch up on my Bobness. And,
well, it turned out to be the best thing that could ever have happened. I went from talking to a dozen to two dozen people a night, especially during winter months when the nighttime signal of that radio station didn't quite make it around the block, to talking to hundreds and, in fact, thousands of individuals all over the world.
I think you're going to hundreds of thousands just between you and me. You're subversive. You're on the edge. You're on the cutting edge, Bob.
And maybe that explains why sometimes damn that smarts. You know, it's like with the streaming. Everything we've done here for a very long time has been to try to create a semi-professional. I mean, we work at being professional broadcast, but to do it in the cheapest possible way.
From my Buddhist experience, I remember saying Nietzsche used to say something about. Does not a fire burn more briskly when logs are added, i.e., you're getting closer. So that shows you're doing something right.
Well, bless your heart for saying it, Jim. I'm just looking at the topic in the chat room right now, and it just says buffering Bob. You know, when I was there at that station, you were talking about the right wingers called me Baghdad Bob. They called me Bob Al Qaeda, and now I'm buffering Bob. Giddy up. It's Buffering Bob riding across the range in a sort of broken up, attenuated broadcast, every third syllable. Oh, Jesus.
Well, I think you're doing one hell of a job, and I'm going to let you go, let more people get in. So.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's awful good to hear from you. Keep in touch. And by the way, for a while there, your audio was kind of sketchy. These last two calls have been absolutely great, clean as a pin.
Okay, I chanted some magic words over the phone.
Lit a candle, turned in a circle clockwise three times, stuck your arm in the air, and said you held your tongue just so. Yeah, I know. Believe me, I know.
Yeah.
So, Jim, you have yourself a good night.
All right, you too.
Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan, and we will keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Well, hey, Tracy.
Okay, so here's the deal. I was just thinking, after I hung up and, you put something on my Facebook page about, Hawaii at $10, made it just $10 an hour, and we were all excited. And then I started doing the math. Okay, so say somebody's working in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
Which is, ridiculously more expensive in L.A., which I can't even imagine any place more expensive than here, but, $10 an hour, $400, if they have a full-time job, because, people don't have full-time jobs anymore, because that means if they have a full-time job, they have to, the employers have to pay medical and all that. So let's just say they do have a full-time job, and minus tax, let's just give it on the conservative side, taking out $200 a month for taxes. So that's what, $1,400 a month? Where they're going to live?
In the capitalist
Milton Friedman-esque, austere miracle. I mean, they're in Hawaii, so you know what do they need with a house? It's paradise, right?
It's paradise. You can sleep on the beach, right?
Yeah, sure.
Sure, yeah, sure.
Or you know, on a maybe in a cardboard refrigerator box, a couple of blocks off the beach.
Right. So I mean, again, 1988, I was making $15 an hour. $15 an hour in 1988, and my rent in 1988 was $300 a month for my apartment, and I had a one-bedroom apartment, and so you think I made it okay? Hell yeah. Okay, $300 a month for rent. I'm making $15 an hour part-time, mind you, at, you know, Rouse, but it was a union job, so I still have my, I had full benefits. And I could also, you know, work more hours because that's what I did. I hustled. Because they, you know, of course, if they gave me, you know, full-time hours at Rouse, they'd have to start paying, you know, they would have to make me a full-time employee at that, at my store. But, you know, so I would go to different stores and get hours so I could, you know, make it. And I just think, you know, like, I'm like fortunate right now that I live in Sherman Oaks. And at the time I had a spare room, but my son moved back home. But for Sherman Oaks, I am paying $1,100 a month for a two-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment, which for L.A. is amazing, and especially for Sherman Oaks. And again, you know, like I told you how much I make, but then I have Jan and Alex move back home, so we're doing okay. But I look at how my son has been living on his own for a while, and he had to move back home because...
Well, young people are just getting ruined, Tracy. But,
ruined. But
you know what? One thing occurs to me, and you know, I'm not usually the glass half full guy or the guy who makes lemonade out of lemons. But from the end of the Second World War to the present, various factions, and it's mostly corporate America, and Joe Bagent just detailed and cataloged this beautifully. Bless his soul. There has been an effort to break up the extended family, which was, in fact, the societal norm of this country up until the end of World War II, where you had grandparents, parents, children, and sometimes even grandchildren all living together.
Yep.
And some of that was by dint of economic necessity, but some of that was because it's sort of... the 2-million-year-old norm for humans.
Exactly.
Does that make some sense? That
and
granny and granddad have busted ass all their lives.
Uh-huh.
And their children take care of them the way they took care of the children when they were children.
Yep.
And the next generation comes along, and the next generation, I mean, right now, my kids... are the 1, 2, 3, 4th generation to live in this house.
Wow.
The house is not doing very well.
No.
But, if things were better, you know, I'd go in and I'd replumb and rewire and build onto the studio and you know, maybe get a second bathroom and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. But still, yeah. That's 4 generations in one house. And what these oligarchs are doing, and what you're describing, I think, Tracy, is a situation whereby, by force of necessity, economic necessity, the American extended family model is reasserting itself in this country.
Well, you know, okay, living here in L.A., I don't, you know, we have our L.A. is a huge melting pot. So we have, you know, Asians and Hispanics and, you know, other cultures. Now, since other cultures, especially Hispanic culture, I love them. They come here, you know, like you said, the extended family, maybe 2 or 3 families might live in one house, right?
Yeah.
That one family saves the money and moves and buys a house. Then another family moves in. It's like they have this one central house. Right? And then as my mother's old house over in L.A., over by USC, there was a family. My sister was just like a younger kid. And they had, like, all these people move in and out. By the time my mom moved to Palmdale, Bob, they have 4 houses on that block.
Wow.
All stemming. Now, this was, 20-some-odd years ago, of course. The economy was different. But my point being that they worked together. I have friends, like my Filipino friends.
Right. Cooperation is the essential human default position. As Dr. John has said so many times, the myth of the lone wolf human who pulls himself up by his own bootstraps is precisely that, a myth.
Myth. You need help. Like I was, my mom was a nurse at Kaiser, and I have friends who are Filipino, and she's like, the Filipino nurses, let me tell you, they work. Grandma and grandpa are at home, and these women work. Okay, the grandparents take care of the kids. What, and then they have something. They're working toward a goal.
Right, and when a neighborhood like that celebrates, whether it be a traditional cultural holiday or a religious holiday or whatever, I mean, you want to talk about cultural joy, and whether whether it be a Filipino community or a Chinese community, Japanese community, whether it be an old line Italian community marching along on some religious feast day, holy cow!
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole community has to put its best foot forward.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, if you want to see the exact opposite of that, come on down to Central Appalachia, and we can show you what an assault on family and family values looks like. And here's a hint, Tracy: it doesn't have anything to do with whether or not a couple of women can go and have some towels monogrammed, or a couple of guys can pick out a China pattern. It has to do with economic desperation enforced upon people so that they cannot stay in the place where their heritage and their home and their family and their culture is. That whole business of the hillbilly highway, the hillbilly diaspora, where people left Appalachia and went to work in the factories of Akron and Toledo and Cleveland, that wasn't because the hillbillies suddenly wised up and got sick of living in what was, for the generations of their people who had lived here, freaking paradise.
Exactly.
It was because they were economically driven out. I mean, everybody looks at the Soviet Union and says, that Stalin really sucked. He relocated people all over the Soviet Union. Well, hell, it happened here. It just wasn't done Stalin style. It wasn't done with an iron fist, but rather with a hot dog in a velvet bun.
Exactly.
And again, Joe Bagent is absolutely an authority on this with his book, Rainbow Pie.
I have it. I still haven't read it.
You just got to. Because the thing is, that magnificent book.
Hold on one quick second, Bob.
Sure, sure.
Hi. How are you?
Honey, where?
I don't think there's other cast in here.
No.
Yeah.
Where are we headed, baby?
Brentwood.
Okay.
So,
let's go. Good time. Sit back. Enjoy the music. Put on your seatbelt. Let's put it.
I know. From here till 7, it's going to be pink process.
Yeah.
Hey, Horn family. We're going to Brentwood.
So, I haven't read it. I bought it, and I just haven't had the time. But
That whole diaspora thing, it crosses both cultural and racial lines. Consider the brilliant black communities that existed in places like Chicago and Detroit and Pittsburgh in the early days of the 20th century. Very much self-sustaining. But again, all that stuff had to be broken up. And here's a hint for the lurking right-wingers in the program. It wasn't broken up by the Civil Rights Act.
No.
It was broken up by a determined effort to break up these healthy communities in service to corporate America.
Exactly. And so, because I think about when I was growing up, because we're not that much, there's not that much age difference between the two of us.
Well, you're a little younger and cuter, but, you know.
Well, not that much younger, because I'll be 48 this year. You'll be how old this year?
I'm already 51.
Okay, so, you know, that's 3 years, boo-boo.
You and Agnes are the same age.
Yeah, okay, so but I am cuter, so I will give you that. But my thing is, we had community, okay, because we were forced into having our own. We had our own stores. We had sometimes, as much as I'm happy about desegregation, a lot of times I wonder, you know, because when you got the chances to move wherever you wanted to move to, it destroyed our community. It really did. And I, you know, people look at me like, well, segregation, you know, where are you segregationless? I'm like, no. What I am is I miss having a community here in L.A. There is no really black community anymore. And there's, you know, you have Koreatown, you have little Tokyo, you have Chinatown, you have our little Armenia, you have Thai Town. Yeah, but there's...
Well, see, that means there's no more racism, Tracy.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's all over. It's gone.
Yeah, it's all over because... You know, and I like what you brought up about a force of family and cooperative now, because things are gotten so tight that you have to pretend together.
Well, right. I mean, you know, back in the early evolutionary days of the earliest our earliest human forebears, the early hominid who decided to get down out of the tree and go walk about because he was just feeling all libertarian and everything, quickly became lion bait. And then the jackals fought over what the lion left, and the hyenas fought with the jackals, and the buzzards just sat back and said, we'll have our little taste of libertarian later.
Right.
On the other hand, the groups who cooperated survived.
Exactly.
And you know, electricity does not change the essential wiring of the human brain. And we are wired to cooperate.
We are wired to work together. We are wired. It's like,
you know, I mean, look at warfare, whether it be ancient or modern. The warrior who jumps out of the trench or out of the tree line or whatever and says, I'm going to get him, dies. The people who operate together as a force, as a unit, they've got a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why this is so hard to understand. And, of course, now you hear it more and more. Every time the Republicans start talking, they start talking about, those liberals and their collective. You know, it's like we're trying to somehow or another we want to establish Mao's cultural revolution and send all these idiots off to a re-education camp. You can't, it would not be a re-education camp. It would be an education camp. And two, it would be an act of futility because you can't educate an idiot.
No.
And they are idiots.
And like, you know, what is the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting to change.
Right.
It's like, okay, dude, seriously? It's not working. I mean, it's working for the rich people, what we're doing in the economy, you know, that 1% or what have you. But for the rest of us, kind of sucks.
Right. And our only, and it remains the truth, and it comes up, you know, there was an article a lot of years ago talking about how labor was is the mother of progressivism, and it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Labor is the mother of the civil rights movement. Labor is the mother of the women's rights movement, the suffrage movement. It all begins with working class people deciding they want to be treated like human beings. I don't know why it is so hard to understand that our only hope against billionaires is to act in good faith, common cause, and collegiality with one another, Tracy.
Amen. Preach, brother, preach. And see, that's
well, it is Wednesday. I mean, come on.
That's right. It is Wednesday. I lost the day. But that's the thing. We have to work together. But again, you know, it still goes back to the fact that, you know, pre-Civil War when the Irish came here and they were first got here, they were abolitionists. they're like, oh, what's happening with the slaves is pretty much what happened to us over in the UK. Those are called United Chinese Kingdom then. So we got to get the hell out of Dodge. Okay? So let's do this. And then they saw how the slaves were being treated. They're like, oh, this is not cool. But the big money people, they're like, wait a second.
Well, then 1864 comes along, the draft riots in New York. And it's largely the Irish who are rioting. And what do? They kill every person of color that they can find.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that's not me bitching about the Irish. You know, I'm part Irish, but
right.
But it's a reality. It's history. It's real.
It's a reality, and it's like you figure what happens. They gave the Irish the vote because when they first got here, they weren't considered white. What were they called? Remember, we've had this conversation. Niggas turned inside out. I know you can't say it. So they weren't even considered, they were considered less than black.
Well, you know, the vote has always been something that the white power class in this country has been dodgy about. Well, they've been pretty, they've been real tight about giving it out. Even in the early 1800s, when the Louisiana Territory became part of the United States, after Thomas Jefferson sort of chucked all his republicanism out the window and said, hey, look, I'm president. I'm buying real estate. The first thing they said is, we're not going to give the vote to those people, are we? I mean, they've been living under the Spanish and the French crown, and they don't understand freedom and liberty and Wolverines. And well, they can't have the vote, can they? And everybody harumphed in Washington, D.C. Oh, definitely not the vote. Not the vote. Can't have, no,
that's
no,
the vote.
No, no.
That's the vote.
I mean, you know, they're papists and... You know, they carry those statues through the streets and people hollering about they want some beads and stuff. Well, hell, you can't trust them with the vote.
Exactly.
And yet, lo and behold, when the Civil War comes along, William Tecumseh Sherman is some sort of a headmaster or a school teacher at an academy in Louisiana, and he grieved mightily when he answered his country's call and went into the Union Army. Because he had, you know, he was from Ohio, and he had come to love Louisiana. I mean, didn't just like it, loved it.
Loved it.
And loved it so much he was willing to shed blood in order to make sure that it stayed part of the Union.
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward to 2014, April, and you got a bunch of jackasses on the public road out in Nevada saying, where are you headed? With guns.
Right. I just, you know, I guess liberal SC put on there that Alan West is saying that the whole Sterling thing is a distraction for Benghazi.
Oh, yeah, I about had to run screaming out into the yard
I
over
said,
that one.
Are we still talking about Benghazi?
It's all, we are all Benghazi now, my friend.
I'm like, still Benghazi? Are we still talking about Benghazi? I just, like I said, it makes me want to holler, throw up both my hands. Like, dude, seriously?
Yep.
Can we talk about?
It's the cheap tequila and the straw. Straw, okay. Tequila should never be consumed through a straw, Tracy, but sometimes it just seems unavoidable.
Oh, God, no. It took me 20 years to drink tequila again. I had a tequila hangover. It took me 20 years to drink that shit again. I was good.
Well, that's like Agnes and gin.
Oh yeah. It's just walking in the store and passing the row of tequila bottles, I'm like, oh. So yeah, no, a tequila stick to the straw. No, even, and you know, I live out here. I could get me some good tequila, and I have now enjoyed good tequila, and thanks to you, good rum.
Oh, did you get around to getting yourself some Barbancourt?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's special, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Every so often, what I do, depending on my day, I'll go home and muddle some mint and get some simple sugar in a really nice glass. And
See, it's not warm enough for it's not warm enough yet here for me to think about that kind of thing.
86 degrees today.
Stop it.
86 degrees.
I think we did get up to 70 today, but I mean, we had a cold wind blowing all night. Yeah, you know, hell, it even inspired
me. Are you
guys
with all these tornadoes and?
Oh yeah, for the most part, tornadoes can't come here. That's the beautiful thing about Appalachia. Like I said, for the people who came here and managed to put down roots here, before the coal industry got here, this was paradise. It really was, Tracy. And tornadoes have a...
You know, we're too far south to see you guys, but, you know, up in the Blue Ridge Mountains, we're in North Carolina, and I'm just looking around, and I just stood by this creek and just stood there and listened to the water. And I'm thinking to myself, no wonder Bob, you know, gets almost teared at stuff that was going on in you know, Virginia, what's going on here. After, like I said, when I went up to Central Coast, I had never been to the Central Coast. And I'm going, driving through the Redwoods, and I'm going, California is freaking beautiful, man.
Oh, see that, my one little foray into just, you know, maybe a half an hour in Muir Woods, like I said, it was the closest I'd ever felt to actually being in a holy place. It was certainly more sacred than any church I've ever been in, and I've been in St. Peter's Dagum Basilica in Rome.
Wow.
Okay. It was a lot of that.
Look at you pissing in high cotton.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was back when I was having my middle class upbringing. That was before they decided to take the middle class out back and axe handle it. Cloven.
Oh,
they're coming completely unglued. The Oath Keepers are fighting with the other militia group, and they're swearing.
Does it have a blood oath going?
It may have a blood feud going. I mean, remember, that's another one of those Joe Bagent moments. Go back and read that magnificent essay, Eat, Pray, Fight, Fuck. Or maybe it's Fuck, Fight. I can never remember. And he will talk about borderers. I guarantee you that most of those crazy-ass white folks with guns out there in Gooberville, Nevada, are cranky Scots-Irish people. I mean, every time I see, and on the one hand, it's like looking at your kinfolk and going, "Oh, home," but on the other hand, you just borderers.
Well, here's another one. Speaking of borderers and just crazy white people with guns, do you watch Criminal Minds?
No, I don't watch much TV at all. Being how we ain't got none here.
Okay, well, I'm so proud of you. They had an episode that took place in West Virginia. Somebody was going around killing people, you know, kinfolk, and it was about a blood feud, right? And so there was one thing, and it was Adrian, what's her name, from, is Barbeau?
From the old Maude show?
From Maude, yes. She was praying to the God of vengeance and all this, and not the God of grace and the God of mercy. And she, I mean, the prayer, I was thinking, I'm like, that she talked about at the churches when you were growing up. And I'm like, the God of vengeance and praying to this and all this. And come to find out the person that was killing people was her, the offspring of her and her brother.
We're not surprised.
That nobody knew.
Well, and one of the latest things to happen here, Bob Murray, the guy who got a bunch of people killed out in the Crandall Canyon mine out in Utah, and somehow has managed yet to avoid doing the perp walk and spending some time looking between horizontal bars like he oughta. Well, a while back, some coal companies and these folks had pension plans through Consol. And of course, Bob Murray is known for having put out in the past, because that heathen Kenyan Muslim fascist and Islamist Muslim communist whatever had a war on coal. Well, just Hansol coal miners, he was going to strip them of their health care.
Because of Obamacare?
Because of Obamacare, because freedom, because money. Wolverines, you know, whatever. Because he's a patriot.
Mm-hmm. And again, give me a definition of
it's whatever it's for the likes of Bob Murray to make a buck, Tracy.
Makes my ears bleed. 26 years ago, as a matter of fact, because as of tomorrow, my son will be 26 years old. So when he was born in 1988. And I was doing.
So your son's birthday is May 1?
May 1.
Well, this is getting interesting and interestinger and interestinger. Agnes shares a birthday with Edward's now wedding anniversary, and Agnes and I share a wedding anniversary with your son's birthday.
Wow. Wow. Well, yeah, then I have
your son was celebrating his fifth birthday when Agnes and I were standing on a hilltop in rural West Virginia with a 30.
I still wasn't ready to go, and then finally my mom said, okay, let's go. So we got to the hospital at about 6 o'clock that evening, and by 7:02, I was the proud mother of a 5-pound, 10-ounce.
Well, yeah. By that time, when you were first down 10-ounce, beautiful young son, we were playing impromptu golf and eating smoked chicken and pulled pork barbecue and having a whale of a good time there. And we'd managed not to get shot, which really increased the good time, frankly.
Well, yeah, you know, not getting shot is always good.
It really is the key to the benefits plan, and you can't say enough of marriage, Tracy.
Well, see, now it makes me even more awesome now. I mean, and that's what's scary also is that that's the same day as my mother and my stepfather got married. Well, we won't mention him, but anyhow, May 1st. And it's, you know, funny that May 1st is Labor Day. And I was in labor.
Yeah, May Day. That's May the International Day. Workers Holiday.
It's amazing what has happened to our country in the last 26 years. I was just thinking about how awesome his life was going
to
be.
Yeah, this was not quite the America that he was going to grow to manhood in, was it?
Mm-hmm. This is not what I thought was going to
no,
be.
No, see, we didn't think that about our youngins either.
I thought it was going to be, because this is, unfortunately, this is the first generation since the Depression that is not going to be doing better than their parents.
There was this notion that there was a fair deal and a square deal, and hard work was rewarded, and then they standing together for the good of your with your neighbor, shoulder to shoulder for your neighbor's good as well as your own, recognizing that they are inextricably entwined, has become a heresy in this country, Tracy.
Yeah, it's sick. It is sad. It is painful.
I mean, it's like that what are the International Women's Forum group of idiots whose press release I read earlier about how raising the minimum wage would be bad for families on the brink.
Right. Oh, okay.
Well, Tracy, I am going to roll so we can work a couple of more calls in.
But yeah, but like one thing I would have to say is 2775, baby. It's the fact that, you know, like you were talking about the union and how labor raised up, and I don't hold back with my Republican friends start screaming about labor union. And so it's because of labor unions that my family and people who look like me had a chance.
Yeah.
And
every time freedom is expanded in this country has done better. Every time it contracts, it does worse.
Exactly. So on that note, you have a wonderful rest of the evening.
You too, and happy birthday to your wonderful son.
Thank you, baby.
Take care, Tracy.
And happy anniversary to you.
Well, thank you very kindly. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling on the way to Brentwood from Los Angeles. Blinking lights on the phone. By the way, we've been trying an experiment tonight. We've had the Horn Malloy Skype chat group online via Skype, and this is interesting. Even though buffering events, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group has had no problem whatsoever with the audio. So on any given night, there are about 20 slots in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and if we have a bad buffering situation and Sparky is available to do it, we'll try to set it up so that that can at least happen, so that there could be an uninterrupted live broadcast for those who want to talk or just want to listen. But there's about 20 slots in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. We're going to go to the phones once more, and then hopefully we'll get the Horn Malloy Skype chat group on board. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Alan.
Hey, Alan. How are you? Thank you very much for the help this evening.
Oh, I'm glad to help. It's about time.
Well, the timing was perfect as far as we're concerned.
Yeah, everybody's having it tough these days. I've been meaning to ask you this question for a long time. Have you ever heard of this guy named Dave Emery? Website Spitfire.com?
No, I don't think so. Last time I heard of anybody named Emery, I think it was Ralph.
His name is Dave Emery, and he's got a website. I think it's called Spitfire. And he recommends some books. I remember reading one book. It's called Undercover by a guy named Roy Carlson. And this guy infiltrated the Nazis in this country before the World War II started. And it was a real interesting book. And there was a lot of Nazis in this country, and they got along pretty well with the KKK, so I guess that doesn't surprise you.
No. Back before the Second World War, the KKK and the Fascist Bund were great buddies.
Yeah. And one of their sayings, they were saying this in the 30s, I think. Tom Hartman thinks it was, it might be off on this because it didn't start in the 50s with that guy. I can't remember his name, but it started in the 30s. It's saying that this is, people going around saying this is not a democracy, this is a republic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard that for a very long time.
Yeah. So I don't think this Roy Carlson was the guy's real name, because he was undercover. He was like a newsman, and he acted like he was a Nazi, and he infiltrated these people. And today I heard about this government study that says that the minimum wage hurt the economy. That's what one of the Republicans said.
Oh yeah, that's every time from the very inception of the idea of a minimum wage, Alan. The Republicans have been hollering, ooh, it's going to crash the economy. Ooh, economic devastation. Ooh, we'll never be able to survive. Ooh. And every time they say that, and, you know, we passed the minimum wage and it didn't happen, we've raised the minimum wage, they've said it again, it didn't happen, we've raised it again, they've said it again, it didn't happen. They're a bunch of godforsaken liars, Alan, who are only interested in keeping the working class down. And they feel like if the working class makes a decent wage, that maybe we'll get all uppity and start acting like human beings who get to walk on their own hind legs.
I imagine it's not a bipartisan government study. Yeah, every time the minimum wage is raised, that helps the economy.
Well, sure it does. It puts more money into circulation because the hanging on by their fingernails working class doesn't tuck those wages away under the mattress and save it up till they can go out and buy convertible debentures. All right. They go out and they do crazy things like buy tires and stoves and food.
Yeah, those things that we need.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the way it looks like to me that things are so bad in this country that the only thing that's going to fix it is like what Mike Malloy says, is we got to. Like, it's got to be a total change.
Well, sooner. I mean, if there's any, and I don't have the prophetic powers in order to pull this off adequately, Alan. But if there's anything to be said, it is that the very nature of capitalism itself means that capitalism will destroy itself, because capitalism is predicated on endless consumption of endlessly available resources. And so it kind of, and because Adam Smith was working, you know, during the Enlightenment, but all of the science wasn't there yet, the idea of the Earth as a closed loop really hadn't gotten that much currency yet. But that's what it boils down to. You know, when you see a train blow up in Lynchburg, Virginia, Alan, because we are sending crude oil that we are just desperately gouging out of the ground in North Dakota and poisoning all the water in the process. When you see the tar sands of Alberta, when you see news stories that say that they want to develop tar sands in northwest Alabama, when you see mountains blown up for 6-inch thick seams of coal that no self-respecting coal company 100 years ago would ever have gone after, fracking, all of these things are evidences of extreme extraction, which are in turn evidences of extreme capitalism going for the very last of anything that's available. And capitalism being capitalism, it does not care who it kills, who it maims, who it poisons, who it destroys. It doesn't care how much of the habitability of this planet it eliminates. Capitalism has to consume itself. So the fact is, it's going to collapse. We don't know when, but we know it will. But the rub then comes in, Alan, in the question of, can we save humanity's ability to live on this planet before capitalism eliminates it?
Oh, that's a good way to put it. When I think of the very wealthy capitalists, I think we got a really good example of one now, and that's that ball team owner who said all those racist remarks.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That's an example of the 1% these days. Very greedy people.
And not just greedy, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it.
Alan, it's awful good talking to you. And again, thank you so much for helping out tonight. You made a bigger difference than you may even know. So you've been with us for a very, very long time. It's awful good to talk to you. And be safe out on the road. And again, thank you.
Okay, nice talking to you. And I just came back from Canada, and I didn't see clear cutting of trees down there. They cut trees in a different way up there.
Yeah, it's selective cutting. Although I'm sure there's some clear cutting going on out west. They kind of clear cut for the tar sands, I think. I think there were trees there once.
Yeah, they had to do that for the tar sands. What a mess. Okay, well, nice talking to you.
Good talking to you, Alan. Drive careful now.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye now. And with a little bit of time left in the program, And just a reminder, $55 to go to finish April even with our fundraising goals. Let's bring the Skype Horn Malloy chat group online. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Devin. Hey, Will.
Hey. Experiment worked. No buffering in the Skype group.
Yeah, none whatsoever.
Worked well, and I'm hoping that we can see the debt for the month. Retired because, as I said in the Sky chat, if I had the money, I would love to take Bob shopping for electronics in Washington, D.C., because it's not easy putting on a show. I've worked with people in the past who put on a show, and the research alone requires hours. And when you have technical problems, it's frustrating. But you did touch on several good points, as did the callers. Right now, we have some people who literally are acting like they were pharaohs of old, trying to gather what wealth they can, perhaps in the belief that they can take it with them, and damn the rest of us. I'm sorry, it's not sustainable. It's ultimately foolish. However, as I said in the Horn chat room, I have a feeling a storm is coming, and it is likely going to be a cleansing storm because people are fed up.
I can't disagree. Like I said, it's a question of whether or not the storm comes before these people get their way and destroy this planet's ability to sustain human life, which scares the bejesus out of me.
I'll tell you something that really irked me earlier is that I heard yesterday a lot of the members of the Occupy movement that got arrested, they're facing federal charges that they have to plead guilty to a low level felony to a man. when you got all the banksters out there, they're still running around. Ain't none of damn one of them been hurt by a fine that they've had to pay. None of them went to jail. And you got them son of bitches out there carrying guns in what state is that, Nevada?
Yeah.
And they're threatening the federal government with firearms. And they're just running around doing it.
You're going to
put the high-level occupiers goes wrong along
yeah,
with
for,
it?
Yeah, for engaging in an act of conscience. Absolutely, Jay Cruzan. But let's recharacterize something, and because I think it's really important that we do. In the time remaining, let's just think about it. Maybe we'll come back to it either tomorrow or Friday. And that's this. The right wing have done a very good job at getting people to think of the government as something other. Those idiots out in Gooberville, Nevada, with their guns and their bullshit, possibly felonious checkpoints, they are not pointing guns at the government. They are pointing guns at us. They are pointing guns at that government which was defined by Abraham Lincoln as being of the people, by the people, and for the people. The fact that the government does not operate that way right now does not mean that that's not the way the government is supposed to operate. And it is only by us insisting that it operate in such fashion that we have any hope of it ever so doing.
And we were here before a bizarre worship of Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand, a block. People are tired of this.
Yeah, you know, so I think if I ever get to Chicago, I'm going to go pee on Milton Friedman's grave.
I'd be tempted to do more, but I need a dumpster.
I want to trickle down on the trickle down guy's grave.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I think that's why there's an armed guard around that patch of dirt where they screwed Ronald Reagan into the ground. You know, he was too crooked to bury. Hey guys, we got to get out of here. Thanks everybody. Since I've got you on the line, Jay Cruzan, thank you very much for putting out the challenge tonight. It made a great, great, great difference. Thank you very much. We do have to get out of here though. Thanks one and all for all of you who keep this little effort on the air. Keep it going. Thanks to our buddy Thomas, who just took us down to only $25 to go in order to finish April even. Thank you very, very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you. Thank you very much to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and yes, ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. The ACHEACT is a winnable wake-up call to America for our ability to demand to be able to live peacefully and unpoisoned in our own communities. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.